And this felt different from the outset in that we took a first draft, complete, finished show to Cameron. When he asked, we knew he was interested in the idea because he'd heard we were writing it, because we've known him for 25 years. It's kind of going to be odd if he's not interested. So we knew it piqued his interest, and that made us even more determined to squirrel ourselves away and write it without playing any of it to him. He heard one of the songs that we recorded at our 25th anniversary concert at Her Majesty's, a song called Magic Fingers, which is a scene that isn't even in the film. It's one of Ron and Dan's complete inventions to give you some idea of why Gilbert is special, rather than just being a mild manager of it, is to give her some gift. And also to give everybody an idea of what the background of the story is, which is that people had had a very long, very hard war, pretty desperate by the time our show starts. And he heard that song, and he kept niggling away, and finally said, well, if you don't want me to produce it, would you let me hear it as your friend? At which point my heart slightly melted.
We hadn't made a decision other than the fact that we thought Cameron wouldn't want to. You know, he's always saying he's going to retire. He's always saying, I don't want to produce any more new shows. So we had been offered Private Function by Ron and Dan. They'd approached us and said, we've got the rights to this film. Would you be interested in writing the songs? Because Stephen Schwartz is a great friend of theirs, and he had recommended us, which was a bit of a surprise to us because we didn't know Stephen at that point.
So I sat beside him in a couple of those concerts in New York when he and I both wrote something for Peter Sacken, the cellist.
That's correct.
And that's where he revealed himself as a fan.
He thought what we did. I suppose he'd heard Honk and Poppins, had he?
And Just So.
And Just So. Oh, so he had to we both only had a vague recollection of the film.
Yeah.
We knew it was Maggie Smith and a pig and Michael Palin. That was pretty much what I could remember.
And our agent, when she sent it through to us, who's now retired, Patricia McNaughton, an amazing, redoubtable woman, she said, darlings, it's one of my favourite movies. You really must watch it. And I think I'm not sure I even went to the cinema, but I remember seeing clips.
I don't think I'd ever seen it. I think I saw it on a screen on TV eventually.
But it seems so unlikely, and Alan Bennett, and I just thought, what are two Americans going to do to Alan Bennett? They're going to slaughter it.
And we were busy, because Mary Poppins had hijacked us for 2 or 3 years. A lot of the projects we'd been developing prior to it were put on a back burner. Soapdish was a commission, so there was money involved, so there was a reason why we were doing that. With Private Function, it was they acquired the rights, and they said, would we be interested in writing it? And we drove to their place. We were in Los Angeles at the time. We drove to their place in Brentwood, and I was thinking, how are we going to say no to these guys before I've met them? Because I just didn't think... I didn't necessarily think it was going to make a musical.
I was in tweeds when I watched the film, and then, in fact, just before we went to see them, we read their outline.
Their act one.
They'd done a complete treatment of act one and an outline of act two. A really rough, you know, 3 pages. Act one was very worked up, and what we both thought was immediately clear was that they had a really rare gift of, A, knowing that books for musicals allowed the songs to do all the best bits, and secondly, that they positively relished that because they had brilliant ideas about what songs could do and why it should become a musical. So each of these characters, you discover something completely new about via the songs. And I suppose you could sum it up by saying that there is a delicious sense of fantasy that has crept into the story. Mm-hmm. So that all of these characters have secret lives that we get to see inside.
Yeah. And Ron was Pulitzer Prize nominated when he was in his 20s. And they were both writers in New York and were both getting their plays put on. Dan was also an actor, which is how he knew Stephen Schwartz, because he'd been one of the first productions of Godspell. They decided as writers they should move to LA because that's where the work seemed to be then for writers. And they wrote all the seasons of American Queer as Folk, of which there were 88 episodes themselves, and executive produced it. They wrote a film called Nearly Frost for TV. They wrote a series called Sisters for TV. And they'd never tackled a musical. And they hadn't actually been back in the theatre for a long time, had they?
But they go to everything. Their knowledge of musicals is encyclopedic, way more than mine.
And they saw these other themes, the political themes, the repression, the hunger, the people trying to be accepted in a small town environment. Mm. And that's what interested them.
But they also, they were very frank, they also thought that to make it a musical, it needed some serious streamlining and some serious plot development, actually. Mm. I mean, different things happen. And if you're going to engage for a musical, you've got to really get in and you've got to care. So you've got to hitch your star to at least somebody on that stage who you feel for. And it's interesting going back to the movie. Maggie Smith is, as she always is, compellingly brilliant. But it's quite hard to believe their relationship, really, truly, isn't it? So it's been very interesting. So we try to understand why these two people met, what's gone wrong, and how you might start to mend it. We don't mend it, but we might.
But we were in Los Angeles because we were doing Soap Dish, and because we were being tarted around to various film studios, because Poppins just opened Broadway,
we had
an LA agent, we were being introduced to the head of music at all the major animation studios particularly. And I just thought it was going to be one too many projects to say yes to.
But we arrived at 11 o'clock for a coffee.
Just to meet.
That we thought might go into a lunch. And we left there at 11:30 that night.
And the next day we wrote the first song.
Yeah.
And the next day we wrote another song. And it just went like bang, bang, bang.
And when we wrote the song Magic Fingers, which is the third thing we wrote, we knew that there was something really special about this. I was intrigued because I've always wanted to write an English score, a really English score. And the first wave of songs we wrote was very English. Then, as we went in, we realised that there was the whole thing of the American dance band influence, which had been so huge during the war. And the way the story developed, that's perfect to allow that to come in and be the strain of kind of really happy escapist music that is in the show. We know we're telling you about the song Nobody. So she's been given Veronica a piano lesson, been butchering fur in these, and in the middle of it, she says, you know, da capo, Veronica, mezzo forte. And Veronica slams her hands on the keys and says, I won't. I hate you and I hate the piano. And said, my mother says, you're a nothing, a no one. Which I think is more or less the line in the movie. She, I'm going to do it in my key, because the key we wrote it in, but then she just goes very depressedly. She goes to the piano when she's serving dinner to Gilbert and her mother. And she... matinees at the Arcadia Theatre, no one even seeing my face, giving lessons to privileged brats. If that's what it's like to have children, it's just as well we didn't have any. Striving to keep a gracious home, set a lovely table, prepare a meal from the meagrest of means. I could have been somebody, I should have been somebody. Everyone said I had a lovely voice.
Did I tell you about your Mr. Joyce? Nobody wants to grow a hump.
Nobody. Nobody. Nobody calls me nobody. I'm somebody they ought to see. Hobnobbing with you, they put me down. I see the way people smirk. Maybe their jibes wouldn't work if I could move in. Allardyces, the Swabies, and the diners on their table in her head going, what a preposterous woman, who does she think she is? I'm on the my wife, is as deranged as his. The woman's an upstart, the woman's a no one, her place is the back of the queue. She begged us belief, a little more beef. The woman is no good, devoid of charm. Won't you smile? Perhaps just one more Yorkshire. One more Yorkshire. Nobody, nobody, nobody calls me nobody. I'm somebody. They're gonna see tea. Rising in the sun. I'll make them eat every word. I'm just one on the earth. Time of the whole town was stirred.
The hoi polloi. Enjoy.
Nobody,
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 sirloin,
you're
ridiculous nincompoop, and she's rubbish at teaching piano as well.
No, maybe they're right, maybe it's true, maybe I'm just a fool. Is this my life, my destiny? Gilbert sings to me. You'll always be somebody.
Your dinner's getting cold.
Your mother's scoffed a lot.
They don't know me.